This program is sponsored by The Church of God International and supported by our viewers.
For over 400 years of modern history, the United States of America and the British Commonwealth nations have ascended to world dominance. In two world wars, they have combined their military and economic might to protect and preserve liberty and freedom. A multi-ethnic culture brought together by their pursuit for religious freedom, conceding to a Judeo-Christian document as the foundation for their social and religious civilization. Why? Why have they been the recipients of such blessings? Are these extraordinarily affluent, materially blessed cultures mentioned in the Bible? Are these wealthy cultures a fulfillment of a previous prophecy made long ago by God to an ancient patriarch? Or should we just consider it all man-made, solely achieved by his own might, wisdom, and power? Fair questions, begging for answers. Stay with us as we explore these biblical questions on today's Armor of God.
In times like these, we need the armor of God for the well-being of our families, to help you stand in the evil day. The Church of God International presents Armor of God, a program of biblical understanding. And now your host, Bill Watson.
Well, welcome, friends, again to another telecast of the Armor of God. You know, we've opened up this program, this particular edition of the Armor of God, with a very cogent and some very logical and very legitimate questions concerning why does the United States of America and many of the British Commonwealth nations today enjoy so much wealth and so much affluence and so much influence in the geopolitical stage and arena of the world? You know, here in the United States as well, around this time of the season, there's a day that actually is designated Thanksgiving Day. Many people will be converging on family homes, traditional places to sit down for a day, an afternoon, and chit-chat with friends and relatives that maybe perhaps they haven't had a chance to visit, to enjoy food and a little bit maybe of wine and song and maybe some games and family events that, well, are traditional to those particular families, and maybe even some old ethnic recipes from grandma and grandpa. But the point that I want to make is that as you're sitting around the table, especially in the United States, and I understand Canada has also a holiday they call somewhat like Thanksgiving, the fact remains as you look out and about the table filled with all kinds of varieties of food, you can't help but to ask the question, why us? You look out around the world, and do you know, friends, I think you do, most of the world is living in poverty and squalor. And the question, again, begs an answer, doesn't it? Why? Why the United States of America and the British, to a lesser degree today, still enjoy such influence, such wealth, and such power on the geopolitical stage? It's a fair question. Why not South America? For that matter, why not Africa or the Middle East? I mean, there's all kinds of money in the Middle East. There's all kinds of oil money. Why doesn't the Middle East wield more power and influence on the geopolitical stage, or Europe? Now, I understand Europe is on the ascent. I know that the European Union is certainly emerging as a more dominant figure in the geopolitical arena of military and politics and economics and technology, for that matter. But that remains to be seen as we go forward in time. What I'm talking about right now is why right now is the United States, why right now, locked in arms, as I say, to a lesser degree, with England, still enjoying the kind of security, the kind of power, the kind of influence that they have in the community of nations on this globe? I mean, can we answer the question? And what about the Bible? Does the Bible have anything to say about the United States of America and Great Britain, the Commonwealth nations of the largest colonizing people in the history of the world? I mean, it mentions lesser nations. It mentions nations like Egypt. It mentions nations like Babylon and Persia. It mentions all kinds of nations of a lesser degree. And if this Bible, which claims to be the Word of God, in fact does illustrate a mission that God has and does illustrate a plan that God has. And he mentions nations of a lesser degree, wouldn't he? You would think he would, wouldn't you? I mean, I would think he would, that if the plan and the mission includes the development of great nations in the latter days that would come on the world scene to play certain roles and parts, that they would be mentioned in the Bible. Well, my friends, I think you're going to find it quite interesting in the remaining portion of this particular edition of the Armor of God of what I have to say about what the Bible does say about the United States of America and the British Commonwealth nations. But before I do that, I want to go ahead and interrupt myself to present the offer we have today. As usual, it's free of charge. And I want to present to you here a tape, free of charge, as pointed out always here on the Armor of God. All you've got to do is dial 888-578-8791. 888-578-8791. Ask for the tape called the U.S. or United States of America or USA and British Commonwealth in Prophecy, along with, and we're offering this, we offer it occasionally from time to time, our home Bible study course. All you have to do is ask, again, when you call 888-578-8791, ask for the home Bible study course, and guess what? We'll send you lesson one. You go through it, you answer the questions. At the end of lesson one, we'll send you lesson two, and then answer the questions, send it in, and we'll send you lesson three, so forth and so on. All you've got to do, as I say, is dial 888-578-8791 or hit us on our website, www.cgi.org. You will find a lot of additional information for your family and for perhaps helping you to better understand what the Bible has to say about Christian living and how you can perhaps enhance the walk that you're hopefully trying to augment and improve with Jesus Christ and God. But you know, let's get back to the question here, because I do have quite a bit of things to cover here in a very short amount of time, and by no means am I going to touch anywhere near the detail that the tape touches on. It's about an hour long or so, so do write in for it. But what I wanted to share with all of you is that basically this question, I would think, begs answering, because it certainly does present itself as a dilemma on the world scene, wouldn't you think? I mean, why? Why has there been such enjoyment for almost over 300 years? And some people would debate the fact that perhaps even over 400 years in our current time, going back some 300 to 400 years, these two peoples, these two cultures, and they are cultures, my friends, and don't think for a moment that this is a racial issue, because it is due to the many ethnicities and races that have made these countries what they are today. Black, red, yellow, and white people have made the United States of America what it is today, and they have all enjoyed and have been the recipients of the blessings that have come down to them as a culture of people, you see. So don't think this is a racial issue. All I'm doing is presenting you a question, a simple question, by virtue of the observation of the geopolitical scene, because it is what it is. I mean, you look out on the geopolitical scene, and guess what? The United States of America, and much, as I've said, the British Commonwealth nations have been the engines of economics, of technological and military might and development throughout the world for the last 300 to 400 years. Why? I mean, if God is part of it, if he has had an involvement in it, he either has or he hasn't. I mean, it's that simple. It is that simple, my friends. You see, so I say, and I ask the question, because certainly when you consider the relationship that America, the United States, has with England, in spite of the Revolutionary War, of course, which was kind of a bump in the road, but all good things have to come to an end, as they say. The point is yes, they have separated and they have existed for well over a couple hundred years as separate nations, but nevertheless, through two world wars, these two nations have locked arms to preserve liberty and freedom. Don't you find that intriguing? Why those two? And why, in addition to that, do those two nations basically stick up for Jewish causes? I mean, they stick up for Jewish causes almost to their own detriment. Why not Iranian causes? Why not Iraqi causes? Why don't they stick up for the North Korean causes or the Chinese causes? Did you ever wonder? Did you ever ask? Why does it play out the way it plays out in the geopolitical arena today that we see in our newspapers and on our television screens? I mean, it's almost as though they were brothers. Ah, therein lies a key in understanding some of the manifestations of the common political policies and foreign policies that these two nations have basically developed together. Follow me through this for a minute, because we're going to blitz through some of these scriptures real quick just to give you an overview. But again, I encourage you to get the tape, because the tape goes through a much more methodic means of identifying much of the detail in between what I'm going to have to bypass. But I am going to give you some high points here and a thumbnail sketch of some of the underlying proofs that certainly, all I'm saying, certainly give cause to at least consider plausibly that maybe, just maybe, there is a much more comprehensive historical connection to these two cultures than what meets the eye. Genesis chapter 12, here many, many years ago, almost 4,000 or so years ago, a guy named Abram, whose later on his name was changed to Abraham, meaning father of many nations, is given a proposition from God. Basically what it is, boiled down to its most finest point, was, look, you leave your father, you leave your homeland, and I will bless you. And I'm going to bless you in basically two fashions. One, I'm going to make you very materialistically affluent and wealthy. Secondly, through your seed, your lineage, your family tree, by virtue of your ethnicity, I am going to bless all peoples of all the world through your line. Now, God is making a prophecy there. He's obligating himself to a particular method, my friends, of being able to answer this promise. Now, many years later, we find that Abraham, whose name at this time was, in fact, Abraham, had ultimately a child, and that child's name was Isaac. We pick up the story in Genesis 17. I'm just going to cut to the chase here again. God said to Sarah, that was his wife, Abraham's wife. She was well up in years, up in her 90s, never had a child until this time. They waited a long time for this promised kid named Isaac. And lo and behold, she in fact did have him. Here in verse 19, chapter 17, book of Genesis, we read, God said to Sarah, your wife shall bear you a son. Indeed, you shall call his name Isaac, and I will establish my covenant with him for an everlasting covenant. So here comes the promise, down from Abraham to Isaac. And then later on, God tests Abraham one more time, and in Genesis 22, essentially asks Abraham to sacrifice Isaac, of all things. He wanted to see if Abraham would obey him. Well, guess what? Abraham, you know the story, did in fact obey him. God was well pleased, and consequently, once again, reiterates the blessing, but now elaborates on it a bit. Here in verse 17, Genesis chapter 22, we read that in blessing I will bless you, and in multiplying I will multiply your seed as the stars of heaven and as the sand which is upon the seashore. And your seed shall possess the avenues, the gateways, the accesses, the means to your enemies. And secondly here, verse 18, in your seed shall all nations of the earth be blessed. Lo and behold, again, a two-segmented promise. One, material wealth, material and physical blessings. And then secondly, a promise that somehow, some way, that through his seed, through his lineage, through his family tree, his ethnicity, all peoples of the world would be blessed through him. Well, guess what? I'm not going to spend a lot of time, not a lot of time on the fact of this second aspect, but I will say this. The Apostle Paul, in Genesis chapter 3, verses 8 and roughly 18, confirms the fact that Jesus Christ was that seed. Go ahead and read it at a later date. I'm not going to turn there right now other than to reference it by virtue of the fact to illustrate that Paul validates that ultimately this promise, in fact, was made and fulfilled, and that God the Father and Jesus Christ, working together as a team, fulfilled this promise in the personage of Jesus. So what I'm saying, basically, is that Jesus was related to Isaac. That's right. I don't know if you realize that or not, but Jesus is in the family tree of Isaac, who is the son of Abraham. Now, how is that possible? Well, we'll see that again here in passing as we go along here in the story. Chapter 35, book of Genesis. Jumping ahead here, Isaac has a son. His son is named Jacob. He had some other sons too, but for the sake of time, I'm going to stay focused. Here in this particular case, Jacob is essentially fighting with the God of the Old Testament that many of us, perhaps we don't realize it or not, is in fact Jesus Christ prior to his human birth. That's another story as well. But nevertheless, the wrestling match went on. At the end of the match, here in verse 10, chapter 35, book of Genesis, God says, your name is Jacob. It shall be called now no more Jacob, but Israel. Of all things, almost 2,500 plus years of human history up to this point, the name Israel now for the first time is being introduced to us. And it's associated with a man named Jacob, who is the son of Isaac, who is the son of Abraham. And here, furthermore, this particular blessing is elaborated on. In verse 11, God says to him, I am God Almighty, be fruitful and multiply. A nation and a company of nations shall be of you, and kings shall come out of your loins. So here we see that furthermore, this physical promise, basically in short, is broken out into sub-segments. Sub-segments being a nation and a company of nations, and royalty is going to be further associated with this particular peoples as they would grow into a nation of people. And essentially is clarified even more so here in Genesis chapter 48. Here the story continues on, and I know I'm going through this kind of fast, my friends, but this is all the more reason why you need the tape. Chapter 48, here's Jacob old, and he's about ready to die. He's blessing his sons, his grandchildren. Now, one thing you have to understand something. Jacob had 12 boys. That's where you get the 12 tribes of Israel. Joseph was one of those tribes. I failed to mention, but I will mention it now. Judah was also one of those boys and one of those tribes. There was Benjamin, and there was Naphtali, and there was Zebulun, and Dan, and so on. There were 12 of the boys with different names. Judah was the one who gave basically the lineage provision for Jesus Christ, because many of you know that Jesus Christ was Jewish. Or if you didn't, you know now, and that's biblical. And consequently, the promise was fulfilled in the personage of Christ, who came through the Jewish line up through Jacob to Isaac and on to Abraham. That promise was fulfilled. However, this promise now is being passed on, that is, this portion of material physical wealth being passed on to Joseph, not Judah, Joseph. And here we see Manasseh, Joseph's boys, and Ephraim, his two sons, who were the children of an interracial marriage, because Joseph was married to an Egyptian. That's right. And these two boys are now before their granddad getting ready to receive a blessing. And old Jacob there takes his hand and he sees the two boys and crosses his right hand, puts it on Ephraim the younger, takes his left hand, puts it on the older Manasseh. Joseph sees this. He tries to correct his father in verse 19, and you will see basically that Jacob says, No, Joseph, I know what I'm doing. I know exactly what I'm doing. And he, that is Manasseh, the older, even though my left hand is on him, will be a great nation. However, Ephraim, the younger, will be first. And so, therefore, in verse 20 of chapter 48 in the book of Genesis, we see that basically he, that is Jacob, set Ephraim before Manasseh. In other words, the great company of nations would come before the great nation, Manasseh. And furthermore, my friends, look at this. Verse 16. And the angel which redeemed me, Jacob talking, from all evil, bless the lads, and let my name be named on them. That's right. Israel's name was transferred to Ephraim and Manasseh. Ephraim and Manasseh received the name Israel, not Judah, not Naphtali, not Benjamin, not Levi, not any of the other children, only the children of Manasseh and Ephraim, which were in fact the sons of Joseph. That was the tribe that received, in this particular case, these particular blessings. And in chapter 49 of the book of Genesis, verse 1, Jacob calls all of his sons together. Again, he's on his deathbed. He's going to profile now all of his boys for the latter or last days, it is mentioned. He says here, I want to tell you that which shall befall you in the last days. I want to hit a high point. Verse 22, you need to get the tape. Let me remind you again, 888-578-8791. Nevertheless, here in verse 22, a point is made. The tribe of Joseph is described to be a very affluent tribe. Ultimately, they would have their bounty overflowing their bounds. They would be protected by God in a great military. And there would be people that hate him in the latter days and would chase him. But nevertheless, they would be a blessed people in the womb. They would be blessed in essentially farming and so forth. And you can read in Deuteronomy chapter 33 as further corroboration of the riches and the wealth of these nations, multitude of nations and a great nation, that would acquire this kind of physical material blessings. My friends, what we're reading here and what we're coming to see illustrated is portraying a geopolitical relationship of a great nation and a great company of nations, of which has royalty associated with it. And I submit to you the tribes of Ephraim and Manasseh, as they were situated in the old nation of Israel back prior to their takedown by the Assyrians in 700, 800 B.C. or so forth, were never characterized, never profiled, never able to be characterized in this manner of a great nation and company of nations. They were just simply tribes of people that were made up of a few hundred thousand or so folks. And Manasseh broken out into two segments. One were more farming people, others were more military oriented. But Ephraim, it was the center area of the geopolitical or geographical area of Israel. And consequently, the two tribes essentially made up a major portion of Israel, but never were characterized as a great nation and company of nations. So what are we to think? Did God lie? Was he just when he told Abraham, look, I'm going to make you a great nation. And when he told Jacob after the fight, you're going to become a great company of nations and a great nation, and you're going to have royalty associated with it. Was he just speaking rhetorically? Was he just essentially saying things for the sake of saying them flippantly? Did he lie? Or do we have to look somewhere else besides ancient Israel to see the fulfillment of these peoples and this culture? Because it is a culture of people who have been the recipients, just like Israel of old. They were a culture of people. They had many strangers among them, my friends, and were recipients of great blessings that God had given them as a people. And so it is here today. There are peoples in the United States of America, and of which are recipients and enjoying those many multitudes of blessings, whether they were born here or whether they were immigrants. Nevertheless, they've received the impact and the benefit of those blessings. And all I'm saying is that when you look out on the geopolitical scope and horizon, you see the relationship, an interesting, intriguing relationship of the United States, Britain, and Israel, of all things, as I say, locking arms and essentially standing up for one another, and as I said before, almost to their own detriment. And so, you know, what are you to think about this? What do you think about the Bible? I mean, here we are in the United States of America in the 21st century, my friends, and we have a book of 66 different books written by different authors that we as a nation in the beginning used as the basis and foundation of our laws and to regulate our civil liberties. That's undebatable. It's without question that this Judeo-Christian book from Middle Eastern origins, written by Hebrew tribes, preserved by the Jews, has become the focal point of the United States of America and the British Commonwealth nations, has been the basis and fundamental foundation of our countries. Don't you find that amazing? Isn't that incredible? Don't you just seem to think that that is just incredibly amazing? I mean, I'm lost for words because of all things. I mean, why couldn't it have been the Quran? Why couldn't it have been something from India? Why couldn't it have been something from the Shintoists? You know, why this particular document of Hebrew origin that resides in the Middle East and was preserved by Jews? So, with that said, if Israel, its name, and all I'm saying is, if the name of Israel is in fact associated with the United States of America and Great Britain, and the history of those peoples now becoming the recipients of promises that were given to an ancient old patriarch of many years ago, then it's logical, is it not, to learn the lessons of history. And what are the lessons of history? I want to show you something in the book of Leviticus. Leviticus chapter 26, my friends. Leviticus chapter 26, and there's also another chapter I'd like to recommend you read. However, I'm not going to turn to it right now, and that's Deuteronomy 28. But in Leviticus 26 is basically the blessing and cursings chapter of the book of Leviticus, as well as Deuteronomy 28. In verses 1 through 13, we are told that if these people, namely ancient Israel, obeyed these particular laws and regulations that God had given them, they would be blessed for it. However, in verse 14, the temperaments changes here, and the gist shifts, and God warns them that if you will not hearken unto me, verse 14, but if you will not hearken unto me, I will not do all these commandments, meaning those blessings. Instead, I will do this unto you. I will appoint over you terror. That's what he says. He says, if you walk contrary unto me and will not hearken unto me, I will bring even more plagues. He says in verse 25, I will bring a sword upon you that shall avenge the quarrel of my covenant. He says in verse 31, I will make your cities waste, bring your sanctuaries unto desolation. Verse 32, he says, I will bring the land into desolation, and your enemies which dwell therein shall be astonished at it. Verse 33, he says, I will scatter you among the heathen, and will draw out a sword after you, and your land shall be desolate, your cities waste, and then shall the land enjoy her Sabbaths. Imagine that. Her Sabbaths. Israel was taken out by the Assyrians, my friends. Why? Because they transgressed the laws of God. They were an idolatrous nation, intent and insistent on making God in their own image. Sound a little familiar? I think, friends, that you should really consider that perhaps, just perhaps, plausibly speaking, that this nation, the United States of America, and this particular message could have a very cogent relationship to the peoples of America and the British Commonwealth. As a matter of fact, I have a question. Could this former Judeo-Christian, I say former Judeo-Christian nation, be held accountable for idolatrous sins that have offended God and the blessings of which He has given to us as caretakers and as recipients of a people's in obligation of His fulfilling that a promise to an ancient patriarch named Abraham? I think you need to consider some of these things. I think you need to consider that these particular bits of information are definitely plausible. Your attention is warranted, my friends. You tell me, what trends do you see developing? Is God removing His blessings? Listen to these few closing comments. We'll see you right back here next week.
You've heard it said, haven't you, that to whom much is given, much is required. And nothing could be truer than that reality in the Western civilization, known as the Western democracies, America, Canada, Great Britain, Australia, for instance. It's undeniable that we've been given great bounty and great blessings. Now, responsibility comes with that, especially on the spiritual side, let alone the physical aspect of how you do with what you have. But here in Galatians 3 and verse 29, it says, if you be Christ's, then are you Abraham's seed and heirs according to the promise that Bill referred to in this program. Now, here's the challenge to you. How are you going to respond with this information? I hope you'll dial toll-free 1-888-578-8791 to receive this home Bible study course that will go through and allow you to study a lesson, answer the questions, return it, and receive the next lesson in line, and also receive this tape by Bill Watson, the USA and British Commonwealth in Prophecy. Both are free. When you dial toll-free, 1-888-578-8791. Till next time, I'm Bronson James for the Armor of God, reminding you to put on the whole armor of God that you will be able to stand.
Many have asked from time to time, how are we able to provide these free offers week after week, like the one offered this week showing on your screen? Well, the Armor of God is sponsored by the Church of God International. It is by the tithes and offerings of these dedicated people that affords us this benefit to you. If you would like to know more about the Church of God International, please feel free to call us at 888-578-8791 or hit us on our website at www.cgi.org and let us know how we may serve you.
Armor of God and the free material offered is brought to you by the Church of God International of Tyler, Texas. You may write to us at Post Office Box 2525, Tyler, Texas 75710. Call toll-free at 1-888-578-8791 or call 1-903-939-2929 during regular business hours. You may visit our website at cgi.org or email us at armorofgod@cgi.org. We appreciate your prayers and support.
This program is sponsored by the Church of God International and supported by our viewers.